You're listening to Real Estate with Kevin Turner on News Talk 4BC.
Thank you, Natasha. Natasha's back at 8:30 with the news headlines. And we're talking real estate between now and 9 o'clock for Calypso Bay, where you can live your dream lifestyle in Southeast Queensland's premier waterfront development. Visit calypsobay.com.au. I just love that name and love that place too. calypsobay.com.au. Check it out for yourself. Coming up to 8 minutes past eight, and what's in the show today? Well, I'm going to speak to Anthony Millett, who's the CEO of a new Australian business called BrickX, and their claim to fame is that they can now have young people investing, well, not young people, anyone, in Australian real estate for under $100. We'll find out how you can do that and whether it's really worthwhile. We'll get a couple of views on that as well. Love to get your thoughts on it too. Your call's welcome anytime, 13 13 32. You might recall over the last few weeks, we've been covering a journey by Nyung Nguyen, young investor in Brisbane, who set about doing, he gave himself a 30-day challenge where he was actually going to find a property, purchase it, and then flip it over. Flipping is simply turning it back over, making, well, hopefully making a profit out of it. So we'll find out the end of his journey today. It's been 4 weeks, and we've been following it for the last 3 or 4 weeks, and he's actually at the journey now. The property has settled very early. I just need to mention to you that it was all pre-recorded because we didn't really want it to go to air during the process for a number of reasons. It probably would prejudice the sale process. But we're at the end of the journey now, and we can tell you what the result of that was today. So tune in, we'll tell you about that a little bit later in the show. Now, if you've been following the news headlines this week, you will have noticed that there's been some very dire warnings of a potential Australian property market crash as soon as 6 weeks away. Well, is it fact? Is it fiction? We're going to get a little bit of literally, we've had these doomsayers saying this sort of thing now for, well, probably even the last 30 years. You might recall we've covered a number of them in this show. Is it a warning that we should be paying heed to? Well, let's find out. Michael Yardney joins me from Metropole Property Strategists. G'day, Michael. Yet another one of these on the landscape, people saying that we're in for a market crash. Good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. And of course, it's somebody from way over in the United States.
Yeah, strange about that, isn't it?
International Strategic Studies Association, who happen not to be economists, and they're not actually property people. They're more defense organization. And what they're warning is that because many of the Chinese buyers buying off the plan in Australia will not be able to settle, they think our property market's going to crash. It will then have a flow-on effect to the construction industry and the government. And they're worried that things like the Australian submarine project or other defence projects are not going to go ahead. So it's just somebody who doesn't know much about property giving their opinions, Kevin.
Yeah, well, there was some pretty dire warnings too from Harry Triguboff, particularly about the unit market. Michael, do you think that's a closer warning for us?
I do, Kevin. So the international study is half right. We should be cautious. There are going to be difficult times ahead for certain sub-markets of the property market. Having said that, that doesn't mean a crash and a recession. There are other potential outcomes, just like maybe slowing growth or no growth for a period of time. But you're right, Kevin, I would be quite cautious about certain apartment markets.
Anyone in particular that you wanted to mention? Or any
Brisbane one is one, and Melbourne also. What's happened is you just have to drive around and you see all the cranes. Kevin, we've had a long property cycle. This time round, the property upturn started in the middle of 2012. So we're 4 years into the upturn. Looking at previous cycles, it's really only been around 3 years before eventually the cycle came to an end. This time it's being driven by low interest rates and a growing economy and growing population.
Michael, I read in that particular article we're talking about that the banks were concerned about who was actually funding development in Australia in some of these high-rise towers. Has that been a bit of a concern for the government in tightening up with lending for apartments?
Well, if we go back a few years, we had a mining boom. And as that was unravelling, the government actually created this construction boom. It wanted it because it wanted a lot of the people who didn't have jobs in the mining industry, mainly the construction workers, because it wasn't the digging the ore out of the ground that was giving us the boom a few years ago. It was the construction of the infrastructure. It was now looking for new jobs for these people. So what happened was the government encouraged the construction boom, which kept our economy going, stopped us going into recession like some predicted, and this is another downturn phase, just like after the mining boom, where we were just building more than we needed. How did it come about? Locals and the banks supporting it, but also the Chinese. And some of these projects have been funded by overseas money, by Chinese developers selling to their people, their own folk back home, not using the normal funding mechanisms and maybe not the same prudence that the Australian banks have had, Kevin.
The warnings about the property market in Australia seem to be centred around the apartment market, Michael. And in that particular article that we're quoting there, the person was saying they're not as concerned about the housing market, that is the house and land market, as opposed to the unit market. Do you agree with that?
Yes, Kevin, we are building in some of the outer suburbs a few too many houses, but not that many, and that will be taken up by all the young families getting married, moving on, having kids. It's really the inner city high-rise market that we've got too much supply. So we're building too many of the wrong things and probably not enough of the right properties. And, Kevin, one of the other concerns about a lot of these properties are that they're substandard. Some of the bedrooms don't even have proper windows. They're small. They're not the way that the average Australian wants to live. They were built for investors. It's investor stock, but not what I'd call investment grade. They won't make good investments. So there's going to be a lot of overseas people hurting and some locals who've followed the herd who are going to hurt in the future as well, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm reminded of a saying that I think some politician made some time ago, and that is the recession we had to have. And I sometimes think that, and I've just come back from Darwin, as you know, and that particular market is, I wouldn't call it a cot case, but boy, are they going through some tough times where they're having to tell investors that the property they purchased 2 years ago is now worth about, you know, $40,000 or $50,000 less than what it was when they purchased it. This is a time when you really find out, in particular real estate agents, who are the good ones, who can deliver those messages and bring people to the reality of what the market's all about, Michael.
Kevin, a lot of these properties have been sold by property marketers, not estate agents, and some of them cloaking themselves in the guise of advisors to the local investors as well. Most investors have been putting only 10% deposit down, hoping not to put any more in when properties settle because they've been promised capital growth. You're buying at today's prices, you're going to settle in 2-3 years' time at tomorrow's values, and the property's going to go up in value. Given what they're finding is that when the property comes to settle, the valuation they get from the bank is below contract price, so they have to put more money in. And then at this current time, the banks are not even lending as much, so they have to find even bigger deposits because the banks are lending lower loan-to-value ratios on lower values. That's if you can get the finance.
Yeah.
And then there's lots of people who can't even get the finance under the new lending criteria.
It's an interesting market. Michael, your book, Guide to Getting Rich, has been out for a little while now. How's it going, and how is it different from other books you've written?
Kevin, The Guide to Getting Rich is actually not about real estate like a lot of the other books I've written or about. It's more about why the rich keep getting richer, and it has a lot to do with their financial fluency. They understand how money, finances, tax works, and it has a lot to do with about how they're thinking. Kevin, I'm being very pleased because not only is it a bestseller here, it's actually been picked up in America and selling in Barnes & Noble and the big stores there because these principles are universal. We all want to get a bit richer. We all want to be a bit more successful, Kevin.
Well, you've been very kind to give us a couple to give away this morning, which we're going to do right now. 13 13 32, we'll take, what do you reckon, Pete, the first and fifth callers? Yeah, first and fifth callers through 13 13 32 for a copy of Michael Yardney's book, Guide to Getting Rich. Michael, thanks for doing that, and also thanks for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Can we get back together in 6 weeks and see if the market's crashed?
Yeah, okay, we'll make a note to do that.
Thanks, Kevin.
Good on you. Yeah, the calls are coming through now. 13 13 32 for a copy of Michael's book, First and Fifth Callers Through Guide to Getting Rich. And as I mentioned there to Michael, I've just come back from Darwin, and boy, is that an interesting market. Interesting in a number of ways because there's still a lot of building going on. And driving around, you can see cranes and construction everywhere, lots of road construction. But the locals tell me that it's nowhere near what it was like, you know, if you wind the clock back 6 to 12 months. So they're really struggling. There are agents up there saying, you know, they're having to deliver those really hard messages, and returns for investors are falling. But it's, you know, it's not the end of the earth. It's really, it's a market correction. It reminds me of what the market was like in Brisbane. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, where we had to be delivering the same kind of message. But you know what? We all lived through it. And I think if you look at real estate as a long-term investment possibility, then you'll certainly come out on the right end of it. It is coming up to 18 past 8. I'm going to tell you about BrickX after the break. And that's a new way for people, hopefully, to get into the market.
Weekend Real Estate with Kevin Turner. Thanks to Calypso Bay. Live your dream lifestyle in Southeast Queensland's premier waterfront development. CalypsoBay.com.au.
21 past 8. More news headlines for you at 8:30. And I mentioned before the break that I'd be telling you about a concept that could make it a lot easier for people to get into the market. It's called BrickX. It is an Australian company. And joining me, the CEO of that company, Anthony Millett. Good morning, Anthony.
Hi, morning, Kevin.
Anthony, tell me about BrickX. How does it work?
So BrickX is an online platform that we launched this week. And we're making it available for all Australians to be able to buy and sell bricks or shares in a property without the high upfront costs that are cutting so many people out of the housing market, but also frustrating existing investors who are finding the current environment far too competitive.
So is it like a cooperative where you get a whole lot of people together and they pool their money and that allows them to buy a property?
So in essence, our properties do have a large number of investors. But what we do is we buy the property up front, we divide it into 10,000 bricks, and anyone can go onto our website at brickx.com and see the great properties that we've got available in suburbs within Sydney and Melbourne at the moment.
Yeah.
We're very transparent, so we provide as much information as we possibly can around all of the financials and suburbs, providing the rental income or the net rental income that gets paid to each investor monthly. And in addition, we revalue the bricks and show you the change in valuations from the independent valuations that are conducted, showing the change in value of the property.
Yeah, well, the key thing, of course, is going to be where you buy these. What sort of tools are you using to make sure that you're buying into an area that is going to improve?
So we're aware that different suburbs are performing differently, and we have a data-driven approach where we're using a lot of macro and micro factors to decide where we're buying. We instill the help of some very good advisors within Australia who are well-known. You'll probably know Tim Lawless from CoreLogic, who's on our board. And what we're essentially doing is at the moment we're looking for those units and those houses in suburbs that are very, very desirable, where there's always very strong demand from tenants and low vacancy risks. But in addition, we're also looking for those ones where there's limited option for oversupply or overdevelopment. So examples might be within Sydney, we've got Double Bay, we've got Mossman, and within Victoria, Melbourne, we've got Prahran.
I suppose, given what you're doing, you've got the ability to buy into some pretty high-end property because you're sort of amortizing the cost of that, which is, I mean, we all know that if you buy in these blue-chip areas, some of the ones you just mentioned, property prices will continue to grow. If, as an investor, I come into this, and I want to ask you who is your typical investor, if I come into this, how do I get out of it, Anthony? Is it difficult for me to sell out if I need to?
So I think one of the unique things about our platform is the fact that you can buy in when you want, and you can also put your bricks up for sale when you want. Now, for you to be able to sell, there needs to be a willing buyer who will buy the bricks from you. And that's why having tools on there such as showing the independent valuation means that when you come to sell your bricks, you can price your bricks sensibly. And as a holder of bricks, you choose your selling price, and they need to be at a level that someone is willing to buy them from you. We're seeing the secondary market on each of the properties that we've got on the platform working very well this week. with over 1,000 bricks traded on each property. In terms of who are our target market, look, we're getting great traction with lots of different groups at the moment. We're getting great traction with first home buyers and first time investors, those that feel disillusioned by ever increasing property prices and you know, have lost all hope of being able to get into the market, and they now feel that they're getting their foot on the ladder.
Yeah.
To also existing property investors who just want a little bit more exposure to some areas that we're invested in, but don't want to, you know, front up the cost of buying the whole house, so they're putting in $5,000 or $10,000.
What's the minimum I can put in? Would it be?
So yeah, the minimum deposit is $75 on the platform, and that would be enough to buy you one brick in a property that we've a unit that we've got in Enmore, which is currently priced at $67.
Okay, so yeah, so around $75. I was going to ask you, are there any other associated costs apart from the bricks?
Yep. So the way that BrickX makes their money is a transaction fee. So there's a 1.75% transaction fee when you buy your brick and when you sell your brick, but we don't charge any funds under management fees or performance fees or trails or commissions. So what that means that is the rental income that comes from into the property, we pay the property expenses that you would expect, such as the water, the council, the strata, and the property management fee. And then the residual, any remaining income, is then paid to investors monthly on their proportionate brick holding.
Yeah, and what do I get for it? And what sort of guarantees are there that my money is going to be safe?
So your exposure is really in line with the property that you're investing in. So each of these properties sit within their own individual trust. And the trust sits separate to the BrickX business. So in the event that the BrickX business wasn't successful, you would still have your percentage ownership of that trust, and there is an external trustee and an external responsible entity, as BrickX is a regulated product, who could then appoint another manager or choose to wind up the trust and return any money to investors.
Yeah, well, I guess like with any investment, you've got to go in with your eyes wide open. Who would you suggest people should talk to make sure that their money is going to be safe?
Sure. Well, the first thing to say is that at our website, brickx.com, you can easily download the PDF, which is very detailed around all of the risks and how the platform works. But of course, everyone needs to be comfortable with what they're doing, and we'd encourage everyone to speak to their financial advisor.
And a solicitor, yeah. Who is behind BrickX? Who actually owns it?
So it is owned by the management team, which consists of myself and Marcus Kalbetzer, who is our executive chairman.
Yeah. Anthony, thank you very much for your time. As we said, you make sure you do your own due diligence, and all the information's there for you. Just the website again, Anthony?
Is BrickX, BrickX.com.
Good on you, mate. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Kevin.
Good. 27 and a half minutes past 8. To get an outside view on this, I'm really keen to canvass the thoughts of CoreLogic, and Greg Dickerson joins me. Greg is the head of property and partnerships at CoreLogic, their group there. Greg, what do you think about BrickX? What are some? Are there any warning signs for you?
I think as long as property selection is good, which would happen with any investment, I think it's a great model. This model is inevitable. Fractional titling, you know, it's not the first one to do it, but their model is great because they've made it really affordable and accessible to, you know, smaller investors, you know, people with only a couple of $100. So I think it's a great idea, but it comes down to what properties are selected.
Yeah, I noticed this model has worked quite well in commercial real estate because the yields are much higher. The only question I'd ask is whether or not that's going to be able to be transported into residential property where the yields aren't quite as high.
Agree, but you've got probably the same ability to negatively gear. So you're not going to get the same yields as you would, but if you are borrowing to invest, you can obviously still negatively gear your small investment. Mm. Yes, but you're right. Residential yields tend to be quite subdued, and they have got actually worse in the last couple of years as property prices, especially in Sydney and Melbourne, have gone up. So you might not get the same returns as you would get in commercial, but then you probably also don't have much of a risk in terms of vacancy rates and the areas and times in which you're not going to get any return.
Yeah, I guess the other question too is, how portable are my funds? If I invest in this, how quickly can I get them out if I want to, if I need to? Because we're talking here about young people who probably are going to be putting, you know, many thousands of dollars in this. They may have a change in purpose, a change in life, and they need to pull it out. How quickly is it going to be able to be
to be extracted out of the scheme too, and how successfully?
Yeah, Kevin, I can't answer that, but I think it comes down to, like any investment, it's how liquid it is. So it's one thing to say the returns are good, but how liquid is your investment? And if you look at stocks, some stocks have got very, very low liquidity, so you might buy them and actually find it very hard to sell them. Others are highly liquid. It's the same in an environment like this. So the more people that take up RickX, the more people that get involved in it, the more likely it is to become quite liquid, and your secondary market with your ability to resell what you've got becomes easier.
Mm. Greg, great talking to you. Thank you for your insight. I appreciate it. Greg Dickerson from CoreLogic. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Kevin.
As he does every week, joining us with a take on what's happening in property news, Kieran Clare from Australian Property Investor Magazine. Good morning, Kieran.
Hi, Kevin.
The Housing Industry Association says there's good news among a fall in housing finance figures.
That's right. They're looking for a silver lining. I think they might have found something.
Okay.
The July figures from the Australian Bureau of Statistics show housing finance dropped more sharply than expected during the month. The HIA, as optimistic as ever, say we need to look at the details to find that silver lining. Now, while the number of loans for established dwellings did fall by about 2%, lending for the purchase of new dwellings actually rose over the last quarter by 2.2%. And in related news, Mortgage Choice says the number of fixed rate home loans rose slightly during the month of August. The Mortgage Choice CEO, John Flavelle, says they're not surprised by the result, given the Reserve Bank cut rates in August and then held them steady in September. Flavelle goes on to say a failure by major lenders to pass on rate cuts in full also boosted the popularity of fixed rate home loans. And I've got to say I'm a little surprised by that result.
Me too, but I've got to say I'm not terribly surprised by the HIA report. New dwellings actually rose last quarter. I mean, that would have to be on the back of first homeowners grant, I would have thought.
You would think so. That's certainly the area that's always going to benefit most from that sort of the rulings around those sorts of grants. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I guess it's encouraging then that it may appear to be working.
Yes, that's right. And there's always that debate about how much stimulus government should give to different sectors. I mean, do you let the market just do its thing or do you step in and help people out? I guess in this case with first home buyers, you like to think they are getting a foot up.
Mm. Yeah. A little bit later in the show too, we got a warning for builders across Australia.
Well, we've certainly got a warning about builders, I'll give you that.
Okay. All right, mate, we'll catch you later in the show.
Thanks, Kevin.
Weekend Real Estate with Kevin Turner. Thanks to Calypso Bay. Live your dream lifestyle in southeast Queensland's premier waterfront development. CalypsoBay.com.au.
24 minutes to 9, and in the break there, telling you about Dead Ant. It's interesting because we've had a lot of discussion in the show in recent times about building inspections. One of the really difficult things is for a building inspector to tell you what's in behind a wall without them sort of pulling the wall down. It's interesting to note that Dead Ant, in their pre-purchase inspection packages, they use the latest technology, things like thermal imaging and microwave detection, to find out what's inside the walls and inside the ceiling. So basically what happens is that they can take an image and they go in past the wall and they can see if there's any white ant activity. It's all heat generated. And this is great technology, and it allows you to, without being too intrusive, finding out what's actually happening in behind the wall. So check it out by contacting Dead Ant, deadant.com.au, and you spell that deadant.com.au. So if you are having a pre-purchase inspection, ask your agent about Dead Ant, deadant.com.au, or you can go direct to them and organise it for yourself. But certainly worth it. You can give them a call on 3807-0122, but it is excellent technology. 23 minutes to 9, joining us as he does every Saturday morning with some great news, hopefully, Dr. Andrew Wilson, Chief Economist at the Domain Group. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Kevin. I'm not so sure about the great news, but we'll see what we can do.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought we might have some good news for first-home buyers, no?
Well, sort of good news for first-home buyers in Queensland compared to other states particularly. We did a model this week, Kevin, which looked at the average savings that are required to get into the market by a typical first-home buyer. And in Queensland, it's a bit over $70,000. If you compare that to New South Wales, it's $115,000. So if you look at average incomes and perhaps using 30% of average incomes saved for that deposit, then it would take about 3 years and three weeks for a typical Queenslander to save that deposit. But in New South Wales, it's nearly 5 years of saving. And if you started now, it would mean that by the time you did save that $115,000 in New South Wales, well, prices would have risen, rents would have risen, and it would probably mean it'd be actually 7 years rather than 5 years. So Queenslanders certainly don't have to wait as long to get into the market in terms of purchasing that average first home property at the moment. So that is good news, and it is actually the lowest of all the major states in terms of the deposit and stamp duty required, because, of course, stamp duty is not required.
I was going to ask you whether the first homeowners grant makes a huge difference to that, and obviously it would do.
Absolutely, Kevin. And the point of this is for established property. Mm. So this does not account take into account the first home buyer grant. And so if you put that into that $72,000 deposit required by Queenslanders typically, that then drops down for new property to $50,000. So and that means the savings horizon would drop to down to 2 years or just over 2 years. So,
yeah,
and that's why we're seeing higher numbers of first-time buyers.
Yeah, well, even if you said that you're going to still keep that horizon at 3 or 3.5 years, that takes care of any inflation in property prices in that period of time, really, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And as I said, the difference with Queensland and Victoria to the same extent compared to New South Wales, and we're talking the major capitals here, is that there's really still a selection of house and land packages on the fringe in Brisbane and Melbourne that are certainly in demand for first home buyers, whereas they're affordable house and land packages designed for first home buyers. Whereas in Sydney, forget it, house and land packages in Sydney on the fringe are, at least $600,000. And by the fringe, we're talking areas such as Orange Park, which is around about 70k for the CBD. So, look, it's a very hard journey for first home buyers in New South Wales, 5 to 7 years. Whereas in Queensland, you can see a clear light at the end of the tunnel. That's why we're seeing so many more first-time buyers getting into the marketplace, particularly in Brisbane.
Yeah, Andrew, we're well and truly, of course, into spring, and you need to just have a look around at what's happening with the market. It's huge profile marketing coming through now. So the auction market obviously doing quite well?
Yes, we've got a rising spring market. Clearance rates just ticked down a little bit in Sydney last weekend, 77% following 4 weekends in a row above 80%. Melbourne actually rose to its highest result in 6 weeks, so 78%. So, spring markets are quite healthy. The Brisbane market had another 55% clearance rate. The clearance rates in Brisbane tend to be a little lower, but that's certainly higher than the market's been for some months. So plenty of enthusiasm, plenty of confidence in spring markets rising. But listing numbers still remain a little bit low, and that's the real challenge for buyers, is maybe a lack of choice of property, but sellers really are having it very well at the moment.
Yeah, you just come back from Darwin too, talking about that earlier in the show.
Yeah.
That's a really tough market. Do you see that market turning around at all, Andrew? Are there signs that it might improve in the next year or two?
Oh, absolutely, Kevin. One of the things, Darwin and Perth have been markets that are hit primarily by the downturn in the mining sector. Of course, prices in Perth are at three-year lows. But Darwin's a smaller market, and that tends to mean it can rebound quite strongly. The Darwin median was nearly as high as the Sydney median 4 years ago. It did move ahead of itself in terms of affordability, and that's because there was a lot of demand for mining companies. And we've seen vacancy rates also quite steep in Darwin for both houses and units because of that, the flying out of the fly-in, fly-out sort of driven demand. But we are starting to see vacancy rates now stabilise in Darwin. Of course, there has been a building boom in the unit market, the inner-city unit market. There are clear signs now that the rental market in Darwin is starting to stabilise, and I think that's the first sign that the market will start to improve over the next 12 months, and I'm pretty confident about that.
Yeah, well, there'll be certainly some people in Darwin very happy to hear that, because, agents struggling to give those very tough messages to the investors and to property sellers about what's happening with the market there. But Andrew, we're going to leave it there, but thank you very much for your time, and we'll catch you again next week.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you.
Weekend Real Estate with Kevin Turner. Thanks to Calypso Bay. Live your dream lifestyle in Southeast Queensland's premier waterfront development. calypsobay.com.au.
In this show, of course, we've given many warnings about dealing with shonky builders. We've even had the QBCC in talking to us about that. It's a very complex issue.
And I'm going to raise a story now with Kieran Clare from Australian Property Investor magazine that comes out of Victoria. Kieran, what's happened here?
Well, what's happened here, Kevin, is that the Victorian Building Authority have prosecuted and fined a gentleman by the name of Mentor Gormani, and he's the director of Gormani Homes in Victoria. They fined him $20,000 for claiming to be a qualified builder when he wasn't. Now, Gormani then entered into a number of contracts for building projects at several sites around Melbourne using the registered numbers of other registered building practitioners to falsely obtain builder's insurance. And when his company went into liquidation and clients made claims for the unfinished work, they were refused their insurance on the basis that the insurance was taken out in a different builder's name to the builder named in their relevant contract. So that's not any news a customer wants to hear.
No, that's not. And of course, these sites, I would imagine, like the Victorian Building Authority site and also the site in Queensland, the QBCC, maintain a list of qualified builders.
Well, the moral of this story, yeah, absolutely. The moral of this story, check the register for the QBCC or wherever you happen to be and make sure that you're dealing with a licensed builder, because imagine finding out that you couldn't get your insurance back through someone dealing with you in this manner. I just can't believe it.
I'm a little bit disturbed and concerned too, because I've had this debate with the QBCC on more than one occasion about just how up-to-date those records are on their site, and we've shown that they're not up-to-date at all. There have been some actions against builders that simply aren't recorded on the QBCC site. So, look, it is very much consumer beware.
Yeah, and it's probably yet another case where it's good to not only go to the QBCC site and check on these registrations, but deal with people that you can get references for as well. I think that helps a great deal. Certainly the builders we've used in the past, we've known to be reliable and have been able to get personal references for their services.
Good insight. Thank you, Kieran Clare from Australian Property Investor magazine. We'll catch you again next week, mate.
Thanks, Kevin.
Well, here we are in what is now week four, probably, in fairness, jumping over to week five as well, a bit of a combination over the last couple of weeks of our journey with Nyung Nguyen, where we're looking at the flipping exercise, where he's secured a property and is looking at flipping it and making a profit in a 30-day period. Nyung, welcome to the show once again.
G'day, Kevin. How are you going?
Good, mate. Just a very quick summary for those who are probably needing to catch up. Nyung found a property on the south side a few weeks ago. He put it under contract for $320,000. In no time at all, secured a contract for $410,000. That crashed on a termite inspection. You then, last time we spoke, you had another offer in your in-tray for $405,000, a little bit less, $5,000 less, but came with a building and pest inspection and a finance clause as well. And I think last time we spoke, Nyung, you told me that you were going to go ahead and do the pest treatment. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. We ended up doing the pest treatment just to cover our backsides, and we supplied the building and pest report to the buyer as well, just to let them know that, you know, this is where we're at, and there are some termites on the property. Not a lot, but there are, and we've treated the termites as well.
So have you now gone through that building and pest and finance, those finance clauses on that contract?
Yeah, we have. So with the building and pest, they didn't even do their own building and pest report. They just used ours, the one that we supplied, and I was really happy with that. He rang up the building and pest inspector just to verify the reports and what the concerns were and what the issues were, and they were all cosmetic. Especially the property being, you know, 50, 60 years old, as a lot of properties are in Brisbane and Queensland, you know, it's not uncommon to have some dry rot and some issues there. But yeah, they're not structural issues, just cosmetic issues. And in the meantime, yeah, their finance has been approved with the Commonwealth Bank, and they did the valuation, and yeah, they've gone unconditional, which is really, really exciting.
Oh, that's good. Well, I'll ask you about settlement in just a moment, but I just want to stay on that building and pest report, because there's a big lesson in that. I think last time we spoke, I asked you if you were going to share that report, and you said you didn't really have to, but obviously you made that decision that that's what you do, and that probably helped you get this across the line a bit quicker.
Yeah, I think so. I think with the buyer there, I just did an open book, transparent situation where I said, you know what, this is our building pest situation, and if you've got any questions or concerns, please tell me now, because I don't want you crashing the contract, you know, 2 weeks into the process or 1 week into the process. Just let me know now and we can put it back on the market. And, you know, that's one of the risks you take when you sell a property, sign a contract. Most of the time you take the property off the market for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Last time we spoke, you were about to settle on the property yourself, which meant that you'd have to use your own funds to get you through to when it settles with this now purchaser we know about, who we didn't fully know about last time we spoke. So so you have settled on the property. That's correct, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. We settled on the property recently, and I just used my own funds. I actually didn't use any bank funding. The reason for that was this contract was coming through thick and fast, and I just settled with cash. And look, the bank funding has been in the background and ready to go. However, now that we know definitely that this property, the buyer is going to go ahead, we're not going to require that bank finance any longer.
Very good. Okay, well, let's look at a couple of dates now. As we said, you have settled. You now know this is an unconditional contract. How long will your finance have to be in the property? What period of weeks?
Look, originally the contract of sale was 60 days. And that was going to be about 7 weeks that my funds were going to be in there. However, I've negotiated with the buyer now to give him a small discount to cover him with 1 month's interest. So the situation there was he's going on holidays for a few weeks and the property was going to be vacant with him being away. So he definitely wanted a 60-day settlement. And since I've been able to negotiate with him to get a shorter settlement and me subsidising, let's say, $1,500 of the purchase price so that he can cover that interest, and he's really happy with that.
Yeah, well, that's a win-win all around, isn't it? I mean, you're going to get a quicker settlement, which means you can pull your funds out, and you're going to pay his the additional funds he would have cost in that period of time. So that's a win-win. That's a great negotiation.
Yeah, it's really a win-win. He's really happy with that. From settlement to settlement, with my funds in to my funds back out, we're looking at actually 21 days. So I know that this 30-day challenge is something that's artificial. From settlement to settlement was my original parameters, but if I can pull it in 21 days, I'm really happy with that. I know it's not the full $410,000 that we originally sold it at, but you know what? We bought it for $320,000, and I say to people, you know, you make your money when you buy, not when you sell. And that's where I created the equity and gave me a whole stack of room to be able to negotiate and create and turn the property around in a really short period of time.
You've had a few extra costs here that you didn't budget for. One was fixing up the termites and then paying the purchaser, you know, $1,500 or whatever it was to cover his interest payments. Have you done the calculations now? Do you know what you'll end up with at the end of it?
Yeah, I haven't done the final calculations, but we're looking at roughly $70,000 net. So purchase price of $320,000. Plus stamp duty, legals, advertising. I think we spent originally $200 or $300 on advertising. We bumped that up when the first contract crashed to, I think, $1,000 on realestate.com.au. So I'm looking at, it's going to be somewhere between $68,000 and $70,000 because we didn't sell by an agent as well. So we sold privately from that $405,000. And there's going to be some legal costs on the other end. Luckily, we don't have any bank fees to pay. So, yeah, we're looking at, I'd say, somewhere between $68,000 and $70,000 net before tax.
And you'd calculate putting your own money in there too? You're taking that out as well?
Yeah, that's going to come out. Yeah, the cost of that money will come up to that $1,000 or so worth of interest, maybe $1,500. And, look, I'm not too concerned about that. It's just having that access to those funds.
Cost of business, isn't it? Yeah. Young, on with the next deal, I guess. So we'll, I might just touch base with you when this all does finalise, just to see what the final wash-up was once it settles. And then we might also talk about your next deal. Mate, thank you for sharing this with us, this journey over the last 3 or 4 weeks. And we'll catch up with you as soon as the property does actually settle.
Yeah, look, I'm really excited about it. I know when I originally launched the challenge to the public and the people in my circle, I thought, you know what, this could fly or this could fail. And I'm really, really pleased that it has come together. I am looking at putting together like a $100,000 challenge in maybe a 30 to 60-day period. We'll see. You know, we'll see if that comes along, and then we can float it and see what people can do.
Good. All right. We'll look forward to talking to you about that as it comes up. I've been talking to Nyung Nguyen from Advanced Property Strategies. Nyung, we'll talk to you in the next week or two. Thanks, mate.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
Well, I can tell you that the property did settle just a touch over a week ago, because all of this was pre-recorded, of course, and the final profit got a text from Young to say that the final profit was just a touch over $60,000. So quite successful if you think about it. Effectively, 3 weeks from his settlement to resettlement, at a period of about 5 weeks from the original contract going. Young buying the property, not necessarily settling on it, but buying it,
contract to contract. So, yeah, quite a successful exercise, and we'll keep you up to date if he does any more as well.
Weekend Real Estate with Kevin Turner. Thanks to Calypso Bay. Live your dream lifestyle in Southeast Queensland's premier waterfront development. CalypsoBay.com.au.
And that's where we're going to go for today. But coming up tomorrow morning in the show, I'm going to be talking to a number of well-known identities and real estate experts. We're going to ask them two simple questions. What advice are they giving their kids about investing? And what advice do they wish they had been given when they were growing up that they now know? And we'll talk to a number of well-known people. John Simon will be one. John McGrath is another one. And I'll actually catch up with a very well-known and recognised sports identity who is also a property developer. That's coming up tomorrow morning in the show between 8 and 9. I'll see you then. I'm Kevin Turner. Thanks, Pete, for your help. And we'll catch you again tomorrow morning. News is next.